go back and you can't help but feel sorry. I mean, I go back with the Atlanta Falcons up by 25 late in the third, blowing a Super Bowl. I'm a huge fan, been a fan all my life of the Atlanta Braves. And, you know, certainly they made more headway this year than last year as far as the playoff. I think next year is the year. I expect, and honestly, a World Series flag over the next 2, 3, 4 seasons with this Atlanta Braves team, especially if they can get resolved their pitching rotation. But here we are, third year as a charm with the Georgia Bulldogs. So close 2 years ago, had a lead in overtime against Bama. Last team out as far as the college football playoff last year. If they were 5, they would be in. They were not. This year, look, to me, it could be 2017 all over again when they lose to Auburn. Everybody just thought that, well, that's it. Instead, they have a rematch, win the SEC title game, and make it all the way to overtime before losing to Bama in the national title game.
Yeah, that is possible. The problem, that loss to Auburn was not a terrible loss. This loss to South Carolina was just an ugly loss. I mean, the fact that you lost to an inferior team is one thing. To have looked that bad doing it, it was stunning that it was as close as it was. But you just sort of got the sense that doom was on the horizon at every point, in every critical turn of that game. Even when they had a chance to win it, on the final play, or at least to tie it up and take it to another overtime, you just got the sense nothing has gone right. Why should this?
Well, and it's interesting. This year we get the 2 bye weeks first, so every team out there, instead of your normal 1, you're getting 2. And, you know, if there's slip-ups, I go back to Auburn, you know, having to start the year with 6 straight games. Well, they had a stretch where they went to Texas A&M. I expected to win there. They return home against Mississippi State, got a W there. But then you're kind of asking for too much mentally, knowing then you had to go on the road to Florida, so they slip up. I'm looking at Georgia, and so they beat Notre Dame, get the bye week, beat Tennessee, although, you know, Tennessee played well for the first 25 minutes of that game in Knoxville. I'm thinking no mental reasons why Georgia at home should have stumbled against South Carolina.
I know. And you know, you sort of saw it coming in that they weren't as crisp in the Tennessee game as people would have liked or expected. Everybody talked about the offensive line dominating. Well, they don't dominate until middle to late in the fourth quarter. There really was never any domination of the front line early on against some teams that you really should have been able to reestablish the line of scrimmage and kind of push them around a little bit. And the Dogs just haven't been able to do that. This was supposed to be their strength, and they just haven't performed up to expectations at this point. Now, is that to say that they won't come out and look like an NFL team later? No, it's not. They certainly have the skill positions. They've certainly got a great quarterback. But, look, they're to the point now where there is no more margin for error. They've got to win out.
Having a chance once again to visit with Steve Eubanks, best-selling author, veteran sports columnist. As far as other things that have caught your attention this year, it's interesting when you go back to 2011 and here we are 8 years later and it has a chance to maybe happen again with regards to an Alabama-LSU matchup. But the reason why we're not talking yet about a nighttime game in Tuscaloosa when these two teams meet, because I think everybody's smart enough to realize that before we get to that game, the potential is there for Auburn to go into Baton Rouge next Saturday and beat LSU next Saturday afternoon.
There is. Look, I've watched every team in the country that's in the top echelon right now. LSU might be the best I've seen. I mean, I keep looking for a weakness, and it's just a different LSU team. I mean, when they first came out with that spread offense and were throwing the ball around, everybody was just shocked. But now that had a few weeks to look at it, you should have been able to adjust to it. And they just haven't been able to. I mean, they are still executing at an incredibly high level. And look, defensively, they're pretty strong, too. I've seen some pass rush on the corners. I've seen some linebacker play that's been incredibly impressive. So I'm a really big LSU fan right now. I'm very high on them to not just win the West, but perhaps win it all.
Well, despite all the points they're scoring, and they've done the 315 points, it's the most in school history through the first 6 games. But how about the fact that Alabama has something they can do tomorrow that only Alabama has done? They did it last year, And that's the fact that they're in a position to score 45 points, in six straight games. And they did it last year. No other team in history has ever done that. And so they go from 62 against New Mexico State, 47 against South Carolina, 49 against Southern Miss, 59 against Ole Miss. And then last year, the 47. I mean, LSU was held to 42 twice this year in back-to-back games, the last two contests against Utah State and Florida.
Yeah, I mean, look, Alabama is playing incredible offense and defense, as they always do. But, you know, it's methodical. It's systematic with Alabama. They're going through their routines and doing and playing the game that you're always and have been accustomed to watching them play. There's dynamic players on that team, no doubt, but I am waiting for the LSU matchups and the Auburn matchups and those late season matchups to really give this team some challenges.
Well, we're looking at that, I mean, for several of these teams, and like the Big Ten's going to play itself out, especially when, you know, whether you pick your poison. I love stats, by the way, and I threw this out earlier in the show, because everybody can talk Alabama, Clemson, you know, the Ohio States of the world. I love the other stories in the college football landscape that sometimes gets unnoticed or not really fully recognized, but like a Minnesota team. You know, now, they've got a winning streak. They've won eight straight. It ties their school record. You have to go back to 1948 and 49, the last time a Minnesota team has won eight straight. And, oh, by the way, they should better that tomorrow, as they are a four-touchdown favorite against Rutgers tomorrow.
I'm so looking forward to watching teams that I never thought I would look forward to watching. You know, I'm loving watching Wisconsin. I'm loving watching Minnesota. I mean, teams that were normally just grinded out, sort of farmhand football. Now they're really fun to watch.
Well, it's like Wake Forest. I was so hoping, and they almost pulled it off. They were down big to Louisville, and they got into one of these amazing shootouts last week. And they still end up falling to Louisville. But they had, like, you know, one of the top winning streaks in all of college football until last week before they lost to Louisville. And they were ranked in the top 25. And so it's fun talking about, like I said, the Minnesotas, the Wake Forest of the world. And, I mean, I like the job Arizona State, what Herm Edwards is doing. This team, a field goal away when they lost to Colorado, this team could be unbeaten right now going into their matchup this week against Utah.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, you would have never thought it from Arizona State. But, again, a lot of times it's just getting the right dynamic leader in there, and there's no doubt Herm Edwards is it.
I was doing something else, too. I was reflecting back over the last 15 years, teams that have played for the national title, not just the ones that have won it, but the ones that have played for it. And, you know, going into last weekend, we're talking about, 95% of those teams still relevant today. The only exceptions, you can throw Florida State in that mix. So certainly, you know, has gone south with regards to that. But for the most part, we're talking about you look at who's in the top, 15 or 20 right now, and it's the same teams other than, like I said, USC, although they're certainly playing better football, but they've had, major issues at quarterback this year as far as injuries. But Florida State, USC, those are the two lone exceptions dating back over the last two decades.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? I mean, you look back to all of the winning programs, and success just continues to breed success. I mean, you look at the recruiting classes every year. You look at the winning records every year. You look at where the talent continues to flock, and it's becoming a smaller and smaller pool of teams.
You want to hear something funny? Missouri, finally, they lose the opening week to Wyoming, but since then they reeled off these consecutive wins. So they're 5-1 going into this matchup tomorrow against Vanderbilt. And so finally they get ranked in the top 25 this week. And I threw it out there. Basically, here's a team. I mean, right now they're in first place in the East by themselves. They can even slip up against either Georgia or Florida in the month of November, still win the East. And if they pull a surprise in the title game, we're talking about a Missouri team that could be one of the four playoff teams. Who would have had that circled?
Yeah, I don't see any of those scenarios playing out, but you're right. Theoretically, it's possible at this stage.
Well, you say that, but, we look at when Missouri's schedule is, they play four games, get a bye week. Play four games, get a bye week. Well, the next time they get the bye week, They get the 2 weeks rest before they take on Georgia, and then they get Florida the following week. Well, remember, they get Georgia after what? Georgia has just got through playing Florida in Jacksonville, and then they play the Florida Gators that have the two games before they have to travel to Columbia to take on Missouri. With Kelly Bryant in that offense, I mean, we're talking about a team that for, 11 straight games, they've scored 31 or more points. I don't know if both Georgia and Florida will get wins against Missouri. I can see where Missouri splits that, but I don't see where they lose both of those games. Mainly, it's just because of the way the schedule plays out.
You know, that's possible. I'm not going to say probable. I'm going to say possible. I would still have to pick both Georgia and Florida in those games. But look, I mean, you're right. Missouri is still playing well, but I think Georgia and Florida are still the two best teams in the East, and that the East is going to come down to that game in Jacksonville.
All right, before we let you go, you know, I was talking about all the work that you do with a Global Golf Post, and I know that on Tuesday, 20th anniversary of the Payne Stewart plane crash, and it seems like yesterday, and it was such a bizarre story. I know you wanted to have a chance and opportunity to talk about that. Here's your opportunity.
Yeah, I actually have a story coming out in Global Golf Post on Tuesday about a retrospective on the Payne Stewart story, and it's going back to that day and just how we were all wrapped up in that moment as the entire nation watched this plane with all the passengers that had passed away on it flying streaking across the Midwest, and everyone's guessing. Where is it going to come down? Is it going to hit in a city? Is it going to, everybody knew it was going to crash. And before the day was out, everybody knew that Payne Stewart was on it. He was the defending U.S. Open champion. He'd been one of the heroes of the Ryder Cup just a few weeks earlier. And it was really bizarre. And so to go back and look at everything that happened that day and then that week, because the Tour Championship was being held that week in Houston, Texas, I think it's going to provide some memories and a retrospective and a different perspective than a lot of people who remember it had.